Hey, girls. I sure hope this story starts taking a happier turn here. Okay, we're going to start with chapter 36. It's the trees who keep the legends. Ash, beautyberry, chestnut, they know the one about the hummingbird. They know that the hummingbird can fly between the land of the living and the land of the dead, that she has been known to accompany the spirits to the other side, hover there a while until they are settled, but then she can return to the side of the quick. That's why she always seems to be in such a hurry, for it's well known that crossing from one side to the other must be done at speeds beyond our seeing. And aren't hummingbirds hard to see? Some call her an intermediary, and that's a good name for her. Some call her a messenger, the right term too. Some know her as Rainbow Bird, which has nothing to do with her special powers and everything to do with the way she glimmers in the sunlight. But mostly, the hummingbird is looking for someone. She's been searching for a long, long time. Garface is not the first human to make his home in these piney woods, nor will he be the last. Long, long ago, there were the people known as the Kadu. They made their home along this very creek, this salty creek. The trees remember them. They do. Many centuries ago, the Kadu crossed the Gulf of Mexico from South America in bark boats and settled here. Merged with the Algonquins from the north, the Apache from the west, and made their own nation, sang their own songs, learned the ways of the trees and the animals and the wandering streams, learned how to make jars and bowls and pots from the red clay that lined the creek. The Kadu can be found in the memories of trees, not just pines, but hackberries, tupelos, water oaks, winged elms, mulberries, cedars, cypress, yupons, boyd arks. The trees remember the village by the creek where the old pine stood. This creek, it's called Little Sorrowful, and it flows from a deep, deep well far beneath the forest floor. It is older than the bayous to the east, the Bayou Tartine and the Petit Tartine. The creek is older than they are and saltier. The salt, it is said, comes from tears. Most certainly a few of these tears came from a half-drowned kitten as he pulled himself out of the salty water. With his mother's voice still ringing in his ears, he looked over his shoulder to find her, but all he could see was a hummingbird hovering just above the water. That's all. He looked around. All his short life, he had never had a moment without someone who cared about him nearby. His mother, his sister, his hound. He had never, ever been alone. Suddenly, the enormity of his moment rolled over him, and he began to shiver. Here was one soaking wet kitten, covered with mud from the stream bed, beside a creek made of tears, and all this kitten could do was cry. Only a few feet away, the old tree stood, helpless, while deep below, still tangled in its roots, the creature stirred. She knew what it was like to lose someone, but unlike the kitten, she did not weep. Instead, she slashed her viper's tail at the solid wall of the jar. "There's a price," she hissed. The jar filled up with steam. Ranger's neck was sore, rubbed raw from pulling on his chain, and his throat ached. Finally, he curled into the damp darkness beneath the porch. He was bred for scent. the scent of squirrels, of fox, of deer, of possums, of raccoons, of quail and ducks and geese. But right now all he could smell were the lingering traces of his best friend, his calico cat, and her tiny boy kitten, his kitten too. All he could hear was the echo of his own frantic bays, now ceased, his shallow breath. He almost forgot about Sabine until she curled up small and lonely, curled up between his aching paws. What do you call someone who throws a mother cat and her kitten into the creek? Who steals them from the hound who loves them? A hound twisting at his chain, wailing. Who never even looks back? Who do you call someone like that? The trees have a word. Evil. When Garface returned to the tilting house, he tugged on the chain. He dragged Ranger out from the underneath and dragged him away from the tiny kitten curled up next to him, left her there, silent, trembling, dragged him into the stinking yard and kicked him hard. Stupid dog, he shouted. What good is a dog who can't even keep a cat out of the yard? Ranger felt the steel toe of the boot grind into his side. He coughed. His throat was so raw that he began to choke. No noise came out. Normally, a hound who's been kicked with a steel-toed boot yelps out in pain and cries in agony, but Ranger was done with crying. He had not a single whisper of a cry inside him. His throat was too raw. His voice was too tired. He could not raise his head to bay a single note, not one. He dragged himself back under the house. He could not cry out loud, but tears splashed into his silky ears. Sabine, smallest of all, tasted the salt as she licked them. Little Sabine. She was not as tall or as sleek as her twin. Instead, everything about her was round. Looking into her face with its silver fur was like looking at the circular face of the full moon, and when she slept, her body was a coil. Now, here was Sabine, alone, with Ranger, her faithful guardian. But here also was a sister without her brother, a daughter without a mother. What was left for Sabine? She looked at Ranger, his chest rising and falling in pain. What could she do? She wanted her mother to come home, to walk into the underneath with a tasty mouse hanging from her mouth. She wanted her brother to leap out at her from the smelly boot. She even pawed at it once, twice, thrice, as if it were with her strokes she could conjure up her silver twin. More than anything, she wanted to make Ranger feel better. She looked toward his empty food bowl. Her own stomach growled. Then all at once she realized she would have to become the hunter. All the small creatures that her mother had brought back, still alive, all the mice, the lizards, the grasshoppers that Sabine and Puck had treated as playthings, had taught her something. They had taught her to become the predator that she was meant to be. At this, she sat up on her haunches. With her rough tongue, she licked her front paws one at a time, taking care to polish her sharp little claws. Then she walked to the edge of the underneath and looked out into the awful open. Soon she would have to go out there, like her mother and her brother, now lost. She took a deep breath and moved closer to Ranger. His raspy pants filled her ears. Yes, she would go into the open, but not until night. Sabine, descendant of the great lioness of the Saharan plains, grandchild of the mother tiger of the Punjab, tiny heiress of the fearsome lynx and cheetah and panther, night hunters all, here was Sabine. The water is not the only element that offers up magical beasts. Look into the upper stories of the trees. Look at the tops of the highest cliffs. Look into the wispy, whispery clouds. For as long as there have been merfolk, there also have been great creatures of flight. Grandmother, who had swum the ancient seas, who had been on the murky Nile, home of the scribe Thought, half ibis, half man, should have known this. She should have known about Hawkman. If she had understood the languages of willow, birch, and bitternut, they would have told her about him. Here in this pine forest, if she could have heard the tales spun by blackjacks and water oaks and junipers, they would have shared his story. Here, they would say, in that long-ago time, was a young hawk, his feathers coppery in the morning sun, his eyes brown with flecks of gold. See him catch the wind currents and fly in wide, swooping circles. See him rest in the tops of the great pines and chestnuts. This piney woods, this great expanse of wetlands, swamps, bayous, of slow-moving turtles and giant armadillos, was new to him, for he had traveled a long, long way. Here he was, a member of the tribe of feathered changelings come to make his forest home. Grandmother Moccasin should have known about the young hawk, who nested in an old tupelo tree right along the banks of the Crystal Clear Creek, the bird who had listened to the sound of the night, the crickets, the cicadas, and the hoot of the owl, the young hawk whose ear was keen enough to hear the rabbit burrowing and the crawdads humming. This young hawk. In the evenings, he also often sat alone in the trees by the lovely creek. There, he could cock his head and hear the creatures of the night, the owls, the bullfrogs, the cicadas, and the white-tailed deer. Like the trees themselves, he knew the songs of wrens and warblers and Carolina parakeets, the whippoorwills and the crows, the red-cockaded woodpeckers, for what, wasn't he one of their kind? Wasn't he? But he also listened to the song of the villagers, the ones who lived along the same creek, the ones known as Kadu, who filled their jars with water, who hummed while they did their chores and laughed at the antics of their children. He listened to their voices, too. The part of him that was human coursed in his blood, pulsed with the beat of the drums. He stretched out his strong wings and cried, "Scree!" One night, when the air was still and quiet, he heard something new. At first he had no idea what it was, not an insect or a bird, not a frog or a raccoon, not a member of the village. No, this was different. It was the most beautiful sound he had ever heard, a melody without words, a song without lyrics. It came from the other side of the creek, deep in the darkest part of the forest, toward the bayous, the large one and its little sister, a place where the villagers rarely wandered because of the quicksand and the million poisonous snakes. He listened. There it was again. He leaned toward the music as it floated through the thick night air of the forest. The young hawk knew right away that what he heard was a source of tenderness. All at once he understood its beauty and clung to the clear, lovely notes. Night after night, he turned his ear toward the song. At first, he listened with his ears, but as the nights passed, he found himself listening with his whole body. Grandmother Moccasin should have known about him. 1,000 years later, here is another listener, Puck, wet and cold, listening for his mama, listening for his sister, listening for his old hound Ranger, listening to the creek running by. All he heard was loss. Loss, a small hissing word, a word that simmers into nothing. Beneath the old pine, grandmother stewed inside her jar. Loss engulfed her as it had a million times before in this dark space. Loss, she whispered, a word that scrapes against the skin. Where was Grandmother 1,000 years ago? Swimming through the old bayous, sunning on the rocks beside the creek, sleeping in the drowsy cypresses, and meanwhile, Hawkman, listening to the music wafting through the trees. He listened with every cell, every muscle, every copper-colored feather. After so many nights, he knew he had to find the singer of the beckoning song. He flew across the salty creek, past the shifting sands, listening for the sultry notes. He let himself be pulled along on their lovely chords, until at last he found the swampy realm of Grandmother Moccasin and Night Song. He landed in an upper branch on a large cypress and watched the two wrap themselves around the trunk of the largest pine and glide to the very top. He was sure he had never seen a creature as lovely as Night Song in her shimmery scales, so black the blue of them glowed. He knew he had never felt this way before. Smitten is what the trees might call it, if they had a word like that in their vocabulary. Birds might have a different word. The piney woods is known for its birds. Here there are martins and swifts, flycatchers, ducks, warblers, and boat-tailed grackles. When the birds saw Hawkman, hypnotized by Night Song's melody, they called out to him, "Brother, fly away!" He heard their warnings but paid them no heed. The song he needed was not theirs, not the song of the chickadees or the wood ducks or the cinnamon teals. He needed her song. Together, the cranes and spotted owls, the stilts and kingfishers, raised their voices in a chorus. "Fly away, Brother Hawk, fly away!" But he was not interested in their anxious warnings. All of them, the vireos and kinglets and peregrines, their voices grew frantic. "Turn away, brother, fly!" He paid no heed. Hers was the song that filled him up, wingtip to wingtip. As he circled the pine forest, the air soft on his feathers, he lifted his own voice, "Scree!" and the night sky filled up with his longing. Most of us would think the song Hawkman heard was only the sighing of the wind or the whisper of the leaves in the trees. We might think it was a star tumbling through the atmosphere or the water rushing down the creek. We might guess that a turtle was creeping through the pine needles or an alligator was pushing his feet against the current. There are many things we might think, but only Hawkman knew what he had heard. Animals sing for reasons. Coyotes howl to set down the sun. Nightingales warble to please the emperor. Prairie dogs bark to attract a mate. Night Song sang because she was happy. With her ancient mother, she had learned the mysterious ways of the forest. Grandmother taught her where to find the tallest, tartest, tastiest crawdads, how to slither high into the trees, all the way into the upper canopy. She taught her where the secret underwater caves lay hidden along the deep sides of the salty creek. No one knew the piney woods better than Grandmother, no one except perhaps for the trees. And no one told stories like Grandmother either. Grandmother told Night Song about the Greek Isles and the white temples that lined the coast of the Mediterranean. She told her about the merfolk of the Isle Sea and the old dragons. Their wings glimmering in the sunlight. Gone now, long gone. She was careful to avoid her own story, the one of her husband and his betrayal. Why dwell on sorrow, she thought. Instead, she shared tales of whales and albatrosses and all the penguins at the end of the earth. No daughter was more beloved than Night Song. no mother more respected. The loneliness that Grandmother Moccasin had known for so many years was long gone. With Night Song, her life was complete. Where Grandmother went, there was Night Song. And where Night Song wandered, Grandmother was close behind. They were inseparable. But as it was with any child after a time, Night Song grew restless. She was no longer a snakelet. She had grown into a long, lovely young snake, and like any young woman, she longed for an adventure of her own. Her forest home, with all its mysteries, began to feel small. The tales that Grandmother told so well only made her more restless. And to add to all that, Grandmother began to seem old, older than the oceans and the hills. And she was. Night Song grew weary of so much oldness. She wanted something new. Day by day, Night Song began to wait until Grandmother closed her eyes for her nap, and she slipped off on her own just to see what she could see and hear what she could hear. It wasn't long before she noticed the handsome hawk, his wings broad against the afternoon sun. Now, alone in her small dungeon, Grandmother hissed, "Betrayed." Deep beneath the loblolly pine, the one along the old creek, she spun in her anger, "Betrayed, betrayed, betrayed." There is nothing new about betrayal, she thought. Nothing. Okay, girls, I guess that's it for tonight. Love you.